Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We got some ass to whoop tonight.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
Damn, Linda, it's Wednesday. Whose ass you kicking? That's a woman that raised me right there. There ain't no doubt about it, man.
I don't think days matter.
Yeah, it damn sure did when she was dealing with us. Well, I tell you what.
Are you shitting me?
Whether she was whipping one of us or punching a neighbor in the mouth for talking trash to one of us. Something else. Well, look, here's the deal. You know, it's been a minute since I've brought the football horny clip to the airwaves here. It's been tough lately.
Before we get to that boner.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot goes into getting to that boner, Tyler. I mean, it is, a lot goes into it. You got to cut the clip. I got to listen to the clip. We got to hear it a second time to see if
it's worthy. I don't know what you were talking about cutting.
I mean, a lot goes into it, man. But I've been critical of D'Amico Ryans and not necessarily D'Amico personally, but just the response to adversity, the response to what is these offensive struggles. And again, we're a month plus into this. I'm not dropping the hammer after 1 week. It's getting old, man. It's hard to stomach at this point in time, especially when you don't see the results that you like. So, I do want to circle back and let everybody know that D'Amico Ryans' defense, the defensive coordinator D'Amico Ryans, is absolutely kicking ass. And when it comes to designing defenses and calling defenses and the overall approach of like what a defense is trying to accomplish and needs to accomplish, being a former quarterback, I can't agree more with D'Amico's, I think, kind of, I would say, his explanation of very base level explanation of what his intentions are, what his goals are every week as a defense, what he's trying to get accomplished as it pertains to the opponent's quarterback. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about that.
My main goal, anytime, depending on the quarterback we're going against, is how do I disrupt his process? So whatever, like I've seen him excel at throughout, you know, the first, whatever, last four games, I try to throw some different pictures at him, right, to make him get off of his game, right, and not give him the easy throws. And that's where Goff really excelled when he had the play action throws. Like he tried to throw on us, guys were just wide open.
Yeah.
So it starts with, first off, guys, just cover your guy.
Right.
All right, and we cover our guys. That's the start of it. And then when you mix in different coverages and different looks, different disguises, right, it just throws them off of what we've been doing. We just put a different spin on it, right, to present it a different way so our quarterback can't just sit back and know exactly what coverages we're playing. Boner
alert. Absolutely love it. I love the fact that you can draw from it. He knows who the hell he is. He knows what the identity is of his players. He knows how to put those guys in position to disrupt. And that's all we can ask. And I think week in, week out, you can draw from that audio too, that obviously it's, if you got a young quarterback in there, you're going to approach him a little differently than you are a Jared Goff. And at the end of the day, this defense has been a top four defense in the NFL And I think it's, as I said, probably two or three weeks ago, like I'm through poking holes, man. I just believe what D'Amico Ryans is putting on the field, overcoming the injuries, doing more with less, you know, and questioning, like, how do quarterbacks keep missing these deep throws? Why the hell don't they attack Kamari Lassiter more than they attack Derek Stingley Jr.?
I still don't understand.
I don't understand it either. But I'm through trying to understand it, Ron, because what's going on is and we see a lot of it. Now, I think the better quarterbacks, which we ultimately saw Jared Goff eventually get to and start having a little bit of success. We saw Aaron Rodgers struggle early and eventually get to it late to win the game, and he had success. And I think down the stretch here, you're going to see better quarterback play. And so you're going to see Tua, you're going to see Pat Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, you're going to see some of those guys do the same thing, and ultimately they're going to get home. But boy, when you talk about, like, this week with Cooper Rush or Trey Lance with the Cowboys, or you talk about whoever the hell's going quarterbacking in Tennessee, when you look at Jacksonville and what they're going to do, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Doug Peterson may be able to get home late. You know, they did last year, like, it was it last year when they exposed Tavier Thomas kind of deal, so they got home then. But I just love the approach. I just love the approach of, we're not going to sit back and cover two Tampa no matter who the hell we play and just hope it works. We're going to adjust accordingly. We've got an identity, and that identity is to be aggressive and disrupt. That is absolutely beautiful. And
when you look at the top offenses they've played, I really think only the Vikings are the only ones that just really just got them.
Yeah,
right? the Vikings, Packers, they did well against 24 points.
Even that, Ron, to your point, that's situational football, right? That's what being a championship boils down to. The Vikings is the only game where you look up and you go, what in the hell is this defense? Yeah, does this defense only have a chance?
The Bills, they obviously held down. And
yes.
Josh had his worst game. Detroit, they had their worst offensive game. The Packers weren't, you know, hitting on all cylinders. They had moments, but they you know, ultimately it was 24 points. So, I mean, the Vikings game is the only one, and when you just have that much evidence, you can't.
Well, when you look at it too, Ron, look at the quarterbacks that you're talking about, right? We're talking about Jared Goff, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, and you're talking about Jordan Love, who that just came down to situational football, which I'm not sure what we were thinking in that one play with Jalen Petrie manned up on Davante Adams against the Jets. I'm not real sure what we were thinking against Green Bay with Derek Stingley Jr. being, you know, 7-8 yards off the ball for four straight plays and them attacking him in coverage. You know, last week, there's some things you can bitch and moan about if we want to, but ultimately last week goes on the offense. And the defense is just when it's all said and done, you're going to get guys healthy again as well. This defense has a chance to be even better. I'm just, again, reiterating that I believe in this. I found an advanced stat, boys. I would call it an advanced stat. I saw that Seth actually retweeted this, so I hope it's real. Seth, I'm banking on you, bub. Seth Payne, that is.
Seth retweeted.
He retweeted this, right? That's dangerous, right? Ian Hartitz is where it came from. A lot of followers. Not sure that he has anybody holding him accountable, but he has a lot of followers. Have y'all seen this? This defense havoc rate?
I have not seen that.
I can get down with this, guys. This is something to keep an eye on now.
I like the word havoc.
Havoc. It's not Havoc.
What a great movie.
It's not Havoc.
Go check that movie out, Anne Hathaway. Go check it out, Havoc.
Is it a good movie?
Oh, God, I think I remember you talking about
that. I've never seen it before.
Defense havoc rate. Let me explain what this is, boys. It's percentage of plays where a defense gets a pressure, a tackle for loss, an INT, a forced fumble, or a pass breakup. Right? So you're creating havoc on the offense in those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways.
All good things.
Tremendous things.
Okay, follow.
And I believe, here's the deal is, when you're doing it at the rate in which the Texans are, like, I think it's a very real stat that relates specifically to the success they're having.
Okay, right? I'm buckled in. Give it to me.
The Houston Texans are number 3.
Ooh. A little quiver down below.
50% of snaps. It's crazy, actually. 50% of the stats, I'm sorry, 50% of the plays that the Texans defense is on the field, they are getting a pressure, quarterback pressure, a TFL, tackle for loss, an interception, fumble, or a pass breakup.
Get it on, baby.
That is bringing pressure, getting home, and covering down tight and making tight windows. A quarterback under pressure make tight window throws or low percentage throws consistently at a 50% clip. I think that right there, more than anything, explains how the Texans defense is absolutely kicking ass. There's two defenses in the league that are better than the Houston Texans at creating havoc, by the way. The Cleveland Browns, 51%, are number two. The Detroit Lions are 51%, so they're actually 1A, 1B right there. So they're tied. By the way, Detroit Lions, that defense that folks are wanting to fire Bobby Slowick over, 51%. Best havoc rate in the NFL. And I think of note here, the Minnesota Vikings, who the Texans have already played, they are the number four team in terms of havoc rate, which is 48% of the snaps, which they proved to be able to do against the Houston Texans, unfortunately. But that's kind of an I guess it's more of an advanced stat. I think it would fall into that category. I like this, Ron. And not just because I didn't even see where the Texans ranked when I first started reading what the hell a havoc rate is. But this is really good stuff. It not only this, you know, explains how they're having the success, but it explains the identity of your defense. I mean, it is a pressure, aggressive, forcing you to make decisions and make plays, throws or catches, and blocks, for being honest, with extreme pressure. While extreme pressure is being applied to you, that's
you're gonna get hit hard if you're playing against us.
That's big time, man.
I think ultimately, hearing that kind of plays out when we watch and see on the field. I think one of the biggest things that jumped out to me, especially in this game against the Lions, but the Bills game plays this part as well. And it may add to some of the reasons why, as I've said before, that the Texans defense have this ability to make quarterbacks miss wide open wide receivers that are running down the field, is they make, to this havoc point, they make everything hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, teams don't, it doesn't seem, there's never, you could probably count how many drives. And it's really no matter if Alshire's out there, Will's out there, how many drives where it's just like boom, 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 boom. You do what you like, bam, we run it here, we run it here. There's a 7-play drive where offense just did whatever the hell they wanted to. You're like, damn. Well, they just took the ball and just walked it down the field. And there aren't very many of those possessions. I'm trying to remember, I think maybe the Jets may have had one in there, but they're just, I think
Buffalo may have had one, but most of them,
but you know, it's not just like it's hard.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, you're gonna
most
grind
of those
out.
Drives with the Texans, Ron, have come at moments when there's like a PI backed up by roughing the quarterback, and you just give huge chunk plays. Like, most of the time that those drives have happened, there's been a reason. It's not like teams are just slicing and dicing, to your point.
Yeah, like it's like, man, boy, that was a 3-yard run, but they paid for it. But like, they, I mean, like, it just doesn't. It doesn't seem like it's easy. All right, as we continue rolling here live on The Drive, I think the greatest player in the history of this organization had some things to say about the players only meetings that the Texans have had. They've decided to go kind of LeBron, not one, not two, but maybe three potential meetings. Wait till you hear what he had to say, and we're going to have some fun with this. Wait till you hear what JJ had to say about team meetings that potentially is happening with the Texans. That's next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
All right. Apparently, the Texans have had multiple multiple team meetings. And when I say team meetings, player only. You know, the old Martin Maldonado specials, the players only meetings.
The Maldonado specials, that's great.
I tell you, man, it felt like he was
Rockets.
He was quick to call one. Remember that? I mean, remember, I believe Martin gave us one, gave us a couple in like two or like in a couple weeks period. He gave us two that he led. But J.J. Watt, the best player to many in this organization's history, was on Pat McAfee. And I want to first go to J.J. talking about his level of concern about the Texans holding a players-only meeting, because I think this is interesting of where he goes. He is clearly not a fan. I wonder how many of them he ran into himself. But this is J.J. Watt on Pat McAfee. As we've heard, the Texans have had reportedly maybe a couple of players-only meetings. Here's J.J. Watt's thoughts on them.
Players only mean they are sitting on top of the AFC South, but what's your level of concern with that going forward?
Oh, no.
I have heard that there was a long players-only meeting. I am on record in the past discussing players-only meetings and what those generally mean for an organization. When I saw the first half on Sunday, I was very close to tweeting out, maybe it's the first players-only meeting in history that was productive and positive and worked. And then the second half happened. So I'm hoping that something more positive comes out. Maybe it needed to be longer. Maybe they need to double the length of players-only
meetings. Wasn't it they were saying 2 hours?
Multiple hours.
Jeez.
I did hear 2 hours. I have no direct sources, but I did hear two hours.
What the
is an extensive.
Are you doing for 2 hours? Everybody on the team got 10 minutes? All right, everybody in here gets 10 minutes. Kaimi, you're first. Fairbairn, what are your thoughts?
I missed the 58-yarder. It's the first 50-yarder that I've ever missed, seemingly, this year, and we got to be better attention. Okay, long snapper, Wiggs, get up there, pal. What do you got? Okay, CJ, Will, Nico, is it everybody talking? Is there a presentation?
It's a long meeting, man. It's a long meeting. I don't know what. That's just a long meeting in general. 2 hours. Doesn't matter if it's the head coach running, if it's the players running it. That's a long time to be in that meeting room.
I hope there was a presentation. A
lot to take from there. I think the number one thing is John Weeks, number two. And he had a nickname for him. Weeksy, like it ain't just. He looked it up. He's got.
Oh, McAfee went kicker, deep snapper. You know, he's an old punter. So
that's pretty. Yeah, he's got those. Yeah, he's got those. So apparently, JJ, as you can hear the how much of a joke it is to him with the players only meetings, and they had that at 6-3 after the Jets game. Apparently, by the way, folks, that they have it's been reported they may have had another one, and there could be another one on the way again. So that'd be three in about a week and a half. This, to me, is my favorite part where I feel like we need all hands on deck. Those of you on the 5-Hour Energy fan line, I need you to listen closely. Those of you on the on YouTube and Twitch as well, I think we got to figure out which players fit the mold of what JJ's going to discuss here. So I need you to listen closely because he's going to take us inside the locker room of how the dreaded players-only meetings go. So think in your mind who this thing pertains to on who would play these roles for this current Texans team.
There is a lot of, like, there's one guy up there that's like, hey, guys, I'm going to take control of this. We're going to get this under control right away. And there's a lot of people in the room rolling their eyes, laying back in their seats, kind of waiting. And then there's definitely one guy speaking that should not be speaking in front of the team ever.
Every time.
For sure. And he's going to try and rally the troops and really give his go of it, what he's seeing from the sidelines that he thinks the team needs to work on.
Nice.
And that guy's always a f***ing idiot.
Yes. Yep. Always. That is true. Yeah, every team.
And then somebody tries to bring it back around, and they're like, all right, so what we're going to take away from this is that we all need to come in a little earlier. We all need to stay a little later. We all need to really give it a good go this week. As the Jets say, 3 good weeks of practice. We need that, and then we're going to be good. And it just ends, and everybody leaves and immediately starts talking to their close clique of friends like, God, that was dumb.
Talking about everybody's speech.
Like, can you believe what's his nuts got up there and said, like, he played one snap one time and he thinks he can tell us how to play? Like,
all right, this is good. This is good, guys. Whoever what's his nuts is.
If laughing was part of getting horny, that would have been a football horny. By the way, that is so spot on. Unfortunately, I've been a part of many of these as a player and as a bench rider. Both God, he's so spot on, man.
All right, let's get this here. Let's get this here. Who's the? Because we've got I've got it here. The take control guy, the person who is the Martin Maldonado of this thing. Who is the take control guy? We got to find out the guy who shouldn't be speaking. And the way that JJ kind of laid that out, it seems like a guy that's really kind of a guy that don't get a lot of playing time, the guy that's just kind of really over the team stuff but sits on the bench and still believes he's a leader somehow, Tim Tebow-like. And then the bring it back around guy to kind of go ahead and kind of build off the take control guy. So we've got to figure out who plays the part in this. Those of you on the text line, jump in. Who is that? Let's start here. Who's the take control guy? I think there are a couple of candidates here. Jim Ward seems like the guy to me that runs right out here and tried to start.
Oh, that's a good one.
It feels like I'm not saying that's it. There's probably some other thoughts. I feel like Jim Ward is a guy that tried to come in here and take control of this piece.
I would go with Aziz Alshire.
Not bad. That's good.
That's
good.
Solid.
That's good. Just arrived, but that's good.
I was stuck between Aziz and possibly Danielle Hunter. He's a little more soft-spoken at his pressers and stuff, but you can tell he gets real.
I think Danielle is in the JJ range. I think Danielle is the one sitting down, rolling his eyes.
Come on,
and
JJ.
Wasting my time when I could be sitting at home, you know, meditating, because I feel like that's what he does.
Working out.
A lot. Like, I feel like he's that guy. So I could see that. Some people are texting in Eric Murray. Ooh, I think there's another role for Eric Murray. I don't know that.
It ain't this one.
I don't think this is. I don't think Al Shire's coming in. Someone said Davis Mills is the take control guy over my dead body. Davis Mills is.
Is that who bought your jersey? Is that who bought the jersey from you, Tyler?
Yeah. Davis Mills didn't do this. All right. So I like that. Aziz, maybe Jim Ward. I think he's in the running. Let's go here. The shouldn't speak guy. The guy that maybe kind of rides the bench a little bit. The guy that takes it, that's taking this thing a little serious.
You I know got mine. One. I know
what's
mine.
Yours? What's yours?
It is very specific to what is going on just right now this season in Houston for the Texans. He's not necessarily a bench rider. Might as well be. I'm going with Dalton Schultz. He better not be right now at this point in the season, given everything that he's put on tape and everything he's shown me out in the field. Nah, bro. Ooh. Sit your happy ass down. I don't need to hear from your soft ass.
No. I feel like he's thinking about the game. I think he's sitting there thinking about how quickly he can get to his PS5, and he's annoyed by this thing. Someone rolling in, Kenyon Green was the guy on there. Kenyon Green just trying. Ooh, I like that. Des King was the guy who didn't know he was about to get cut, but he was the guy on the practice squad that is rolling. I think Des King's a good one. Christian Harris is the guy that shouldn't speak, but then steps up to speak. You got one.
Man, I think there's a couple, but they're not bench riders either.
Oh, I got one.
I think Titus Howard is one that should Ooh, not speak.
Yes. Same realm as Dalton Schultz. Right,
well, I just don't think he's viewed as a leader, and I think there's a level of silliness there a lot of the times. I'm not even talking about piling on because he's my stock down guy this week. But I also thought of Robert Woods being a guy that probably shouldn't speak, given he didn't play much. But I'm gonna be honest with you. I was pretty set on Titus. I think Tyler's right. There is Dalton Schultz.
You guys are off here.
No, I think it's good.
I got it.
I like Dalton Schultz.
Said nope.
Kendrick Green.
Well, I mean, hell, that's
Kendrick Green fits the mold, is sitting on the bench. I feel like Kendrick Green is somebody that gets on the offensive line's nerves when they come over to the sideline, and he's got pointers every time about what he should do. This, I think Kendrick Green is that guy. Hey, man, I was in Pittsburgh, man. Like, I'll do anything
Kendrick
for the...
Kendrick Green.
Not Kenyon.
Yeah, not
Kendrick.
Kendrick.
Kendrick Green. I was in... Yeah, hey, I play fullback for the team here. I've done it. I've done it all. I'll go and play fullback. Kendrick Green is the guy. Man, if you don't sit your happy ass down...
That's a good
one. All right,
one.
MJ Stewart was my second one. All right, now let's get the final one. The bring it back home guy. And this is where I believe
Oh, there's one answer.
This is where I believe that Eric Murray's role slides right in. I feel like Eric Murray slides right in, a guy that has been on teams that have won championships right when he left. Championship teams, he was there, then they win, he leaves. He leaves and they win. I think Eric Murray is the guy that comes right in and builds right off of what Azeez Alshire did to start the thing. And people are ready to go, but he doesn't understand the time, and he's still going. And we're like, come on, man. And Dalton's like, man.
Been here 2 hours, see, bro.
Y'all going to hate me for this one. Because this is one of them two young studs we got.
Jalen Feach. Oh, Will Anderson.
This is Will or CJ.
I was thinking CJ.
In a players-only meeting, we got to talk. We got to contribute.
Yeah, we can't be silent. Oh, yeah, we're the faces of this franchise.
I got to be one of these guys. Yeah, I'd go with one of the young bucks, man. Got to contribute. I need to use everybody else's comments and kind of put a bow on this meeting so we can get out of here. Well,
there's a lot of people rolling in on this one. Foley, we're getting that rolling in. Foley would be the guy to step in.
Just remember, guys, iron sharpens iron. There we you got go. It this yeah, week, that's okay? A good,
yeah, I got you.
That guy, iron sharp. It's you versus you, fellas. CJ's really good.
Remember
at this
Proverbs
one,
4, man. Come on now.
Yeah. Someone said, Step Diggs, this is the way he's going to help the team by talking.
God, JJ's so spot.
I would love Jameis Winston in the role.
Oh, Jameis would talk through all of them. He'd play every last one of the roles up in there. Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's a lot. I think someone just texted in Mario Edwards would be the one that's speaking that shouldn't. Hell, your ass just got popped. Sit your ass down.
Hey, he's back this week.
You're the reason. All right.
No Christian there.
Coming up, Brandon Mario. Scott, he'll join us. We'll get his Texans report and discuss how he's seeing things and what's going to happen coming up as they head to Dallas. That's coming up.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Next.
Football in H-Town is on the rise.
I love D'Amico Ryans, man. I tell you what.
H-Town, I'm back.
Our guy B. Scott has all the latest from the gridiron.
I don't see no bitches nowhere around here.
It's time for your weekly Texans report.
You ain't laying down for nobody.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in as we are live back here on The Drive, 440 on a Wednesday. You know what that means. That means we are joined by B. Scott, Brandon Scott. You can catch all his work, sportsradio610.com, as well as all over the station throughout the weeks. All right, Brandon, this feels like the lowest point that we have been since D'Amico has taken over. At this point, we've got people, to me, the biggest story has been Bobby Slowick and where people have gone on Bobby Slowick. People talking about wanting him fired, wanting him to move on, all of this and that. From what you've watched and what you're covering and even also with what you're hearing and how they're handling this, what's the sense that you get inside the building of how they feel about Bobby Slowick? Right, like we've got a sense and understanding of how they felt about Kenyon Green. They benched him. What's the sense you get they feel inside the building about Bobby Slowick?
So the best quote and the best thing to reference and to think back on is Joe Mixon after that game, where he's talking about we got to start playing to win and not playing not to lose, or something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's essentially what he was saying. That those are the vibes, and I don't think that there is a lack of confidence or that they've lost confidence within the building. Certainly what we hear and the fan base and even here at the station, like, we got questions, serious questions about the play calling, the scheme fit with the personnel, like what you want to do did y'all ultimately acquire dudes that can execute what you want to do? Like, that's a big question for the team right now. But in terms of Bobby Slowick himself, I think there's still a level of confidence in him. It's just a matter of, hey, we got to adjust to the personnel that we've got, and we've got to figure out a way to get our head out of our keister at the end of the games. Like, this inability to score points in the second half, it's not just like a one-off type of thing. It's a trend. It's not an anomaly now. It's a trend, and it's a problem. And so it's more of, hey, let's kick it in gear, as opposed to we got to make changes. Because the reality is, and Clint, you can understand this too, like, you can change play callers all you want, but it's going to be roughly the same, like, for the most part. Like, I don't think it's going to be significantly different if you go to the next guy, because the playbook is roughly the same, and it's still mostly the same people that have input into what they're doing. So it's just a matter of making that adjustment and doing your job better.
Yeah, Scott, I think there's the bullheadedness and the resistance to changing what you were trying to do. The thought of, like, hey, we don't even know who we are and what we're good at until, like, week 8, week 9, right? Like, that's what's killed Bobby Slowick. Like, that, like, Bobby not responding in a timely fashion the way he did last year to the offensive line being injured immediately. To him, week 1, I remember him saying, man, I started too fast, put too much on these guys' plate. We got to pull it back. We got to do something different. The O-line gets injured. Then they get healthy. The receivers get injured. Then they get healthy. Like, they responded to everything. And I think the big thing they responded to was having a rookie quarterback. They protected him all year long. And everything went into that style of play. And we heard all the talk about being more aggressive from the beginning of training camp. They signed Steph Diggs, paid him $22 million. Yeah. Obviously, they were going to try to be more aggressive, right? The fact that it took him 8 weeks to realize, like, for whatever reason, this offense is not going to be able to continue to call those same plays and survive. It's just not. It's got to change, right? And so there was significant change, and I'm going somewhere with this, like, to your point of, like, changing the play caller. It literally looked like Sunday night that it was a different play caller than the first 8 weeks, 9 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like a different play caller based on how he was approaching the game. So you got a different play caller, right? This was a different story of just the moment was too big. You messed the bed with a big time opportunity on your plate. And it was, to me, it was more on the players at this point in time than it was necessarily the play caller. But
yeah, because see, the thing is, Bobby Slowick is the big topic, and I think that's just kind of the not scapegoat.
Oh, God, he is.
Yeah, well, because there are some legitimate criticisms, but it's sort of the pile on. Because if you look at it, kind of the Clint's point, play calling was not the issue, the reason why they coughed up that game to the Lions.
Right.
It was missed opportunities. It was, hey, you got the ball first and goal on the 3-yard line because you got this really good nicely schemed up play, and Joe Mixon being a badass getting you the ball first and goal on the 3-yard line, and you come away with a field goal. But it's all, let's celebrate because it's 10-0 Texans and you're up on the Lions, but that's a missed opportunity.
Yep.
And it comes to bite you at the end. Missing field goals, obviously, like, you know, it's a long field goal, but that's another example. And then, of course, when we start talking about the turnovers from C.J. Stroud, one of which was very uncharacteristic, like the one that you've been talking about, Ron. It's the one that stands out to everybody. It's like,
I think they both were, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
They were.
Fair enough. So all of that is, okay, what is Bobby Slowick supposed to do about that exactly? How do you scheme around lack of execution on basic things that were supposed to work out
in
your
favor? I think Bobby has definitely reached the point of when it goes wrong, it's him. When it goes well, it's CJ, it's Joe, the players, Rico. It's Joe. Like, it's not in, like, you don't think of, like, oh boy, look at those big plays, that touchdown he schemed up or he did. I think he has reached that point. And now, listening to you guys talk, and I'm sure Clint will jump in on this, but I'm curious from you, Brandon, because I've seen some of the things you've said. Are you worried about CJ?
Yeah, I'm absolutely worried about CJ. Like, and it's not really so much of his confidence, because I feel like that's going to be there. It's really more so about him regressing. Like, not doing, yep. And I gotta give you some credit too here, Clint, because you saw this a little bit before I did. We did a show about a month or two ago from one of those Buffalo Wild Wings locations, and you were saying at that time, hey, I need CJ Stroud to play more like the CJ Stroud of last year and not like the one of this year. And maybe for me, that critique was ill-timed, because I thought he did do that in that more recent game.
I remember what you're talking about, yeah.
But you were speaking to a grander point, a more larger point, and maybe nitpicking a little bit, but saying, hey, these things are issues, and they have, over the week since then, have absolutely manifested themselves in the way in which you were talking about, exactly in the way in which you were talking about. So it's a real issue. I think CJ is still, like, ultra talented. That's not the problem. But to me, if they don't figure out these offensive line problems, which, by the way, again, it did look a little bit better on Sunday, on Sunday night. If they don't figure that out,
they're all fixable.
We think. But if they don't actually,
we asked B. Scott, not you, D'Amico.
B. Scott said,
But until you actually fix it,
it ain't all.
You risk, at the very least, stalling the development of your young quarterback.
Yeah, look, what we saw, the adjustment by Bobby Slowick this week, and it was throughout the game. It just was more successful, obviously, in the first half, as in terms of resulting in points. What Bobby Slowick adjusted, it's a three-pronged problem: offensive line, offensive coordinator, and C.J. Stroud. Bobby Slowick adjusted his play call. In other words, he called more screens, he called more quick games, which forced C.J. Stroud to execute on a different clock, which covered up and masked the mistakes that we've seen in the past from the offensive line. It eliminated the potential of the offensive line getting overwhelmed and C.J. Stroud just getting absolutely pummeled for four quarters. It eliminated that from the equation. Right now, where the concern is, B. Scott, is at what point, because you're handcuffed. You got to be able to do more than that. Like, at what point does this offense, and is there a point, right? You would know this better than anybody. At what point does this offense, whether it's better O-line play or C.J. Stroud, I can call a mid-range progression pass game, and you're going to recognize early that it's not there, so you're going to drop back and you're going to check it down right now. You're going to throw it to the tight end Y option right now instead of hanging on stuff downfield. Right?
Yeah.
Either the offensive line's got to get better and let him hang on stuff downfield, or he's got to get better at recognizing it and get the ball out of his hands, or
you can't count on the first one.
Or Bobby can't call it. Like, that's what people don't understand. Like, Bobby, like, I would fire Bobby tomorrow if the play calling had not changed against Detroit.
Yeah.
Like, that's the fireable offense. Because I'm not saying there's not a problem. There's obviously a second half problem that we all need to talk about, and we figure that out. By the way, if anybody has the answer to what's going on in the second half, call NRG. They'll probably pay you $1 million to get it from you, right? So that's still a problem. And Bobby has not been good all year long. Don't get me wrong, but that is like the adjustment, the improvement, whatever you think that is that we saw where they should have scored 33 points against the Detroit Lions. It started because the play caller adjusted.
Yeah, but I think the result, the ultimate result, is proof that it is a three-pronged problem.
Agreed.
Anybody that wants to just lay all of the blame at Bobby Slowick's feet.
Absolutely.
Or lay all of the blame at C.J. Stroud's feet. Or use the offensive line's play as the scapegoat.
Bingo.
You're doing it wrong.
Absolutely.
Because this was a perfect example of, hey, okay, so the play calling's a lot better. The offensive line plays a lot better. Oh, but look, C.J. Stroud is, at least in this moment, seems to be regressing. You know, and you even had some moments where the offensive line came up short for with some of the penalties and things like that. So, like,
it all connects to me.
Exactly.
The offensive line issues prevent you from doing some of the things that you want to do.
Ron, and this is where me and B. Scott were talking about this a month ago, and this is the fear. This is why I was so critical of it at the time. Is the result of the bullheadedness of the coaching staff to not adjust and force the hand to, at the very least, eliminate the quarterback and get the hell beat out of him. The one that loses in that equation is C.J. Stroud. Mm. Because now, when the play calling changes, which it did Sunday, you still see the effects of him getting the hell beat out of him for 9 weeks, right? And it's just one of those where now he's got to focus on himself and getting himself better and to be the best version of C.J. Stroud. Like, the quarterback is the one that ultimately it all culminates, and that's where we as fans see it come to fruition.
I think that's maybe the biggest mistake Bobby has talked about. The play calling stuff, as I've said, and adjustments, like D'Amico said, like, adjust, get out of here. Like, they're adjusting throughout the game. The play calling doesn't work because of the execution in most cases. This is not Baltimore only ran the ball six times in the second half in a one-possession game when that's the best thing that they do. It's not that. I think the biggest thing is, I think they trusted, and I think Bobby's at the top of this, that CJ would just kind of change it on his own. and would, as you were saying, breaking it down, start to look from short to high and not allow himself to just get hit and do things on his own to change up like he did last year. But he was coming out, and he's going to stay being aggressive.
Yeah.
That's where he was in this place. And I think they really trusted that he would do it himself. He's a second-year player, like you said, and damn it, you had to go in there and forcibly force it in how you called it like they did on Sunday.
The letdown of it, though, is that it was the one step forward, two steps back, because it seemed like it was happening in the first half. That's how they got that lead to begin with. It seemed like it was going right. I mean, I know they had those three field goal drives, one of which should have probably, at least one of which should have been a touchdown.
Right.
But it's the one step forward, two step back. Like, what happened? Again, to the question, what happened in that second half to the reason why you weren't able to match that? Which
Well, B. Scott, there's no doubt about it. The Detroit Lions defense adjusted. But what people don't understand is, like, they want Bobby to then adjust to that. And I expect Bobby to adjust to that. But what Bobby can't do is then adjust by calling mid-range progression pass games and expecting the offensive line that you know can't protect to protect. Like, that's not it. Like, people want him to do that.
Is that Slovic like, losing it?
That would be criminal. That would get CJ hit more. That would cause third and longs consistently.
Even though that's probably the easy answer to the adjustment. That
if everything was perfect, that would be the answer, right? I mean, that's a perfect how you would want it to work out is, I'm going to come out, I'm going to limit all the risk, I'm going to bang the quick stuff, the screens, we're going to run it a little bit, we're going to get a 23-point lead because they're turning it over, we're going to protect the quarterback, we're going to protect the football.
We're going to go double moves.
In the second half, we're going to double move, we're going to throw this thing down the field, and we're going to put the nail in the coffin.
Yep. That means time.
But I can't protect. So the flip side of that is, if I call those plays, I give sacks. By my decisions, I end up in third and long. I get sack fumbles. I take a lot of risk.
We're going to have to continue this to the break.
Sorry.
We got to take it to the break. All right, coming up.
Oh, Tyler, you mad, Tyler?
No.
Okay, coming up to the
break. Hold on, I got one more point.
5 o'clock fire coming up.
It was fun, man. I'm here for it.
With Slowick, man.
We'll talk to the break. 5 o'clock fire, one of Houston's favorite son returns. We'll discuss that coming up next.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.